Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on the Everything app at jwright929. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to keep streaming, you can do so. Odyssey app, free to download, free to listen. We're also streaming live on the iHeartRadio app, as well as the TuneIn Radio app. You can check out the live streams over on YouTube, Twitch, and X, the Everything app. It is all happening on X. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. Follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. How was last night for you?
In terms of the Grizz?
We can go with that.
It
was a little shaky for a little bit there.
I was a little annoyed. Like, granted, fourth quarter Grizz showed up, but, I mean, I did have some PTSD back to the devastating win that the Grizzlies had over the Nuggets. Was that, last month?
Yeah.
A couple weeks back. I definitely got nervous, but we will be setting up quite the war on Friday.
I didn't know we had shooters like that. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I mean, two nights ago, they tie the NBA record, still got beat by double figures. That was special. And then last night, I mean, when Cedric hit the back-to-back ones, I was like, oh, God, here we go. Let's welcome to the program. He writes about college football, college basketball for CBS Sports. You can follow him on the Everything app at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
It's one of the best days, sir. It's one of the best days.
Because P's back in the mix?
Well, not that. I mean, I don't need Patrick Reed atop my leaderboard. But other than that.
No, you know what?
You do?
I miss him. I will rephrase. I miss Lady J. I went back today, as I saw P at the top of the leaderboard, I went back and followed Used Golf Facts online just in case, if she wants to buck her head again. Like, it'd just be great. It'd be great to have the Reeds back in the mix a little bit.
Uh-huh. Well, that's the beauty of a major championship week in golf. We get the live guys, if you want to call it a beautiful thing. I mean,
hey,
really,
he's soon to be a back on the tour.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. So there you go. I mean, he's coming back. How is that working, by the way? Like, how are these guys getting back on tour? How much did Brooks have to pay to the Saudis to get out of his live? Like,
so,
I thought those contracts were written in blood.
So Brooks had... You got to remember, Brooks is one of the first guys. The story goes, and it's not been really all that reported well, because I don't know how many people can report on the contracts that are apparently pretty closely guarded. But supposedly, when Liv had to go to 72 holes for official world golf ranking points, that opened up the opportunity for Brooks to get out of his contract.
Ah, okay. Well,
and now some of the other guys, like, I believe that Rahm wanted out, but because Rahm signed later when Liv was better at writing the contracts, apparently Rahm's is pretty tough to get out of. And I think Reed's deal just expired. Like, he was just up. And there was no way Patrick Reed was going to get whatever. There was no way they were just going to give Patrick Reed the money that he got initially.
Well, I'm sure coming back to the tour, he's got enough money to buy his strawberry refreshers with no exclusions. So,
no inclusions, right? Or was it no refreshers. I think it was just no refreshers.
Okay. Well, he's atop the leaderboard, but he did just make a bogey. So, I love the way the course is playing. It's firm. It's sunny. It's not going to rain all weekend. It's going to be a lot of four putts, I think, this weekend.
Speaking of Mason Howell, the young amateur, I think he had like a four putt on six, maybe. That was pretty electric. It is absolutely pristine out there right now. Like, it's already Disney World golf, but like, it's even more so right now.
You got this kid, Jackson Harrington. He's going to play at Tennessee. He's in the field. He's, I think he's through 17. I think he's made like three pars, because it's been like bogey, birdie, double birdie, bogey, 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 birdie. Yeah, it's crazy out there. Not a lot of pars, which is what you like to see.
Rory's one under and hadn't hit a fairway.
Right.
Yeah. So right now, Patrick Reed currently leading. He is four under, as Cobb mentioned, through his first 10 holes. Tommy Fleetwood, one shot back. How do we say it? It's Christopher Wrighton.
Yeah.
I think he's Norwegian.
Kind
of he's a Scandinavian. He is three under as well. Sam Burns now ties Patrick Reed at the top of the leaderboard. He just birdied the 11th. That won't happen very often. Although it is the backwards wind, so 11, I think, is playing downwind today.
So the crazy thing about this Masters app is you can literally pull it up and see it. So, like, I'm going to pull it up and
I'm pretty sure, because I think they have the north wind today. I think it's like it's reverse of what it normally is. I think 11's playing downwind.
Yeah, beautiful weekend, man. I love it. It's like I get done with the NCAA tournament, the Final Four, and then I just get to hang out, watch the golf. Granted, you know, we've got a date night tonight. We've got we got some things to do this weekend, but I'll spend plenty of time on the couch. Don't worry.
I got the old text today because it is absolutely pristine here in Memphis as well. Like it
right.
is
right. That's kind of the downer. It's like I want to watch golf. I also want to play golf.
Well, I also got the text like, let's go do something. And then you want to respond like, does do something mean watch every broadcast that we have of the Masters?
Hey, this ain't the day to go feed the ducks at Shelby Farm.
This isn't patio season for me. Like, it's like at the same time, it's like, do you maybe punt on Thursday so that like, just to be clear, this weekend is. Do not ask me to do anything this weekend.
I think that's the move. And then how about this? We've got a friend of ours who's getting baptized on Sunday, but they're getting baptized at the early service.
I
was like, yes, that is awesome. Congratulations to you and congratulations to me because we're going to the early service, which means I'm going to be home by like 10 o'clock. My priorities might be a little out of order there, but nonetheless, it works out nicely.
You know what we had this happen on Sunday. Do y'all change the times for services on Easter to accommodate?
Yeah, they do like a whole bunch. Yeah, it's all different. It's all different. Yeah.
It is shocking. If you just move a church service up 30 minutes, it is shocking how much that affects you. Like, we are pretty much never late. And obviously the crowd, you know, it's more crowded on Easter. This is the first, like, I think I paid for it just because we walked in, like, during the second song.
Yeah, I mean, the Sunday morning routine is, I mean, no pun intended, it's sacred, right?
Well,
and then you mess it up, and it's tough. And then you get out early, and you're like, oh, I'm not even hungry for lunch yet, right? So you got your Sunday lunch staple. But, yeah.
Also, speaking of the Masters, why do we have 4, 5, and 6 as a featured channel? You know what I mean? I don't know what we would call it, but like,
I think it's just so you can have something to see early. Cause like that starts, that's the earliest one that, you know, cause you can't do Amen Corner until,
okay,
you know, 8:30 Central.
Why not just follow the people? Cause can we acknowledge 4, 5, and 6 are up there with 14 and 17 as the worst golf holes on the, I'm kind of woke. Like, I think they put it on 4, 5, and 6 just because, like, they're going to force you to watch those holes. Because if you think about it, 1 is definitely more interesting. 2 is a par 5, so scoring chance. 3 is a short 4, another scoring chance. 4, 5, and 6, so you have 2 par 3s and then the hole that is consistently probably one of the hardest, but there's nothing to it characteristically. 7 is a better hole. 8's another par 5. And then 9, Hey, 9 kind of looks like 18. Like, it looks enough like 18 where, like, I think they're just trying to make us watch those holes.
Nah, yeah, they should go 1, 2, 3 as featured holes. Because
yeah.
You get to see the now driving. The guys get introduced.
Yes.
You get to see, I mean, you would have seen Freddie Couples make a birdie on 1. Hey, brother, we're going to see that.
Is he playing with the yellow ball?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
We're gonna see that birdie on one from Fred Couples a ton, because who knows when his last Masters will be. So they're gonna milk the crap out of that over the next few days. But yeah, and then two, I love two, because it's like
downhill,
you drive down the hill, and then it's maybe an eagle chance. You know, you're gonna see five or six eagles there this week. You're gonna see some birdies. Then you're also gonna see Bryson pull it into the trees. A lot of variance there. Three is great because it's like the only par four under 440 yards on the whole course. It must just be like broadcast logistics or something. I don't know, but I'm doing the on my big screen. Like, now that the show started, I've just got it up on my iPad, watching the featured group with like Rory and Bryson and all that. But on the big screen, I like the multicast.
The mosaic.
Right, you can see the featured groups in one corner. You see the featured Amen corner in another corner, 4, 5, and 6 in another, and then I don't know what I'm seeing in this fourth corner. But
I think it's 15 and 16. I think the special broadcasts are featured groups, as you mentioned, 4, 5, and 6, Amen corner, and then 15 and 16. Because technically, what the green at 13, I think it's just the tee shot that counts as Amen corner, right? I think it's the second shot into 11, 12, and the tee shot in 13. And then they skip 14 and 15, but it's skip 14 and then they give you 15 and 16. It's to like try and give you the hits, if you will. But yeah. I'm curious to know. So we have our first ever Amazon Prime broadcast, and that just started up. They got Jack in the chair.
Ooh.
I need people to let me know how that's going. If you've been listening to Jack recently, it's not great.
Yeah, he's getting on up there, man. Like, I don't know that that's the draw that they think it is.
He did roast an absolute duck hook this morning. Like, it was hot. It was the old AOC ball, hot and left.
Gary Player and Tom Watson can still strike the ball pretty well.
Well, then Gary gave us another sick leg kick.
I mean, he looks better than ever, man. Like, my man's 90 years old. And he's still apparently trying to
sell his three spots that can play with him at the Masters.
Hey, at this point, I just give him, like, if you make it to 90. And you're still, I mean, if you make it to 90, I don't care. Like, great job, man. Like, you can be as phony as you want to be.
He also went with Tiger. I mean, he had the same take everybody does, like, get a driver. And his rationale is like, I'm still, you know, whatever. I'm 90 years old. I could look at peak fitness, but I don't drive. Like, it was great.
Jeffrey, your Gary Player imitation is kind of like your Family Guy.
Yeah, it's my Stewie.
Yeah,
I have to get into it. The problem is I need to hear Gary speak, and then I can start doing it. But yeah, that definitely was just Stewie. All right, a couple other things I wanted to get to. So Eric's going to join us here next segment. We will also have Jason Smith during hour number two. We'll keep you updated on everything happening at Augusta, as well as getting into more of the world of sports. All right, I wanted to talk some basketball with you. Let's start with, are you familiar with what could be happening in Salt Lake City tomorrow?
Does it pertain to the Grizzlies' hopes of getting a lofty draft pick?
We are talking about one of the most consequential must-lose games in the history of the franchise.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's Memphis, Dallas, and New Orleans all huddled up there together, and there's a big, big difference in where they all end up in the odds.
New Orleans has at Boston and Minnesota left. Now, the Timberwolves cannot move. They are locked in at 6. Like, they can't move up, they can't move down. And so they've started resting up. It's possible the Pels pick up a win there to end the season. I do not think Dallas is going to win the rest of the way. And so we have the Utah Jazz on Friday. And if anyone has gotten a look at the Jazz, the Grizzlies
have lost 10 in a row.
The Grizzlies, well, this will be a combined 1-19 in their last 20.
That's going to be a tough ticket, huh?
But the real problem is what Utah is facing. So the top three teams, there's no difference between being dead last, second to last, or third to last. There is
a huge difference in being fourth, and that's where Utah is.
And there's an even bigger difference. No, you're 100% right. Four and five are the same. Brooklyn has the Pacers left. So it's entirely possible the Nets could pick up a win. And if that were indeed the case, Utah, if they lose their remaining two, they finish neck and neck at three. But there's
Who wants to lose more?
Correct.
Basically.
And
and Memphis. And we're talking about significant odds differences when it comes to getting a top four pick. So what is that going to look like, man? Like how many new injuries can we invent before that game?
What more can they do? Like, they're signing 10 days. Like, we've got new, like, how do we say it, George? Adama Ball?
Yep, Adama Ball, Lucas Williamson.
I mean, Cobb, there was a guy I texted to Michael on, was it Monday, George? In our
was
group.
This there a Coney?
There was a guy that wore 71, I believe.
I'm going to go back and check to see who that is, but I think that's a Coney.
I think he's double nickels.
Oh, you might be right, because we did pick up a 55.
There was a guy on Monday or Sunday, I can't remember, maybe it was the Sunday Milwaukee game. I'd never seen him before.
No, Williamson is a double fives. Okani is straight up five.
Okay, it was the guy that...
Adama's wearing 72, so he might be off his 10-day, so let's go to Monday. Because he didn't play.
DeMichael said he's a G League vet. Is there another Cobb? Was there another Tennessee guy? Not in the May Shack. Like, is there another Tennessee guy that's been like a hustle guy for a while?
Did not play against the Cavs.
So yeah, I mean, you got this Toby Okoni guy.
It was not him, because at first that's when I was trying to go through the roster. I went to the Grizzlies.com.
You don't mean Whitehead. Do you?
Maybe.
That's double zeros. Huge, by the way.
No, it wasn't him.
Step in on a 10-day and pick up double zeros.
Well, hey, look, you got a scout for your summer league team. That's what's going on here.
Can you have a double zero and a zero? I guess, right? Is that any different than having a 3 and a 33?
Yeah, I think you can do it. Yeah.
I don't see why
Derek Whitehead's double zero. So this Grizzlies roster has a 67, a 72, a 55, a double zero. Yeah, when you get into those numbers, oh, buddy.
Though, when you start getting into legitimate offensive lineman numbers, it's a problem. No, I'm trying to, let's see. I'm going to scroll.
I went even back to Chicago. There was no 71.
No, I was trying to scroll through.
Because Ball is wearing 72.
It was not Ball.
He's also been playing pretty well, which is almost annoying that these guys have been playing pretty good.
The one that it was Lucas Williamson. I'd never seen him. Where was he from?
The Hustle.
He played at Louisville. Played at Louisville, Chicago, though.
That's right. Okay. Because
you may be conflating the Tennessee thing with the fact that he was on that Louisville Chicago
team.
That's
what it was. Because I think actually
beat Tennessee.
No, I think DeMichael mentioned. Is he the guy that hit the shot that hung on the rim for 10 minutes?
He didn't hit. I don't think he hit the shot, but he was a part of that rotation as a freshman. Like, he played in that game, and then he continued to play for Loyola as they were good under Porter Moser. So he was like pre-portal era, and so he played like 5 years there, got the COVID year, all that. So he's been around in college, but he had never played in the NBA until his little chance with the Grizzlies here. So, like, yeah, you got a 27-year-old kid getting his first NBA opportunity right now.
So the other thing that we are thinking about is, do we think this, what we're watching right now, which is horrific basketball, Do we think this is the? Do we think this is just the way it's going to be, or do we think this is just because it's this draft?
Well, so there's two factors there. One, the future, the next couple of drafts, not just 27, but also 28, are not shaping up to be great NBA drafts. Just I'm basing that on the high school classes. Like, nobody likes this high school class of 2026. Like, sure, everybody wants Tyron Stokes or whatever, and I get that. Like, there are a handful of high-quality players, but it's not nearly as deep. This next year in college basketball, it ain't going to be like this year. So the incentive to tank next year will be lower, and I think it's going to be the same in the year after that. So I think it's, in large part, it's this year with the depth of this draft class at the top and then throughout the lottery, throughout the first round, where you feel like you can get a quality, good player in the 20s, which you don't always feel that way. And now, then you also consider the fact that in years, you know, years in the future now, right? Like, they're probably going to implement measures to limit tanking or to de-incentivize it. And you're in the Grizzlies position. You're like, it's now or never. Well, like,
I don't think there's a real punishment. Like, in the end, if you make the organizational decision to lose, I don't really think that there's a punishment that's going to really deter you. But what I do think is true is I think this year it's gotten out of hand, but I also think that this is an outlier.
Well, I would say there is going to be like less incentive to lose. Like, if you make the organizational decision to rebuild, if they flatten the lottery odds, then like all of a sudden you're like, is it really worth making up these injuries and like resting guys who could benefit from reps just to try to lose to get in a better draft position? If they were to take steps to basically flatten the lottery, and so like there's no, like if there's less of a difference between being 13th in the lottery versus being third, like, are you really going to go out there to try and actively lose? Like, I do think there's a difference. But they got to do it. Like, the NBA's talking.
The other question is, I'm not aware, what are the mechanics? Because obviously the players have to approve it. Do the owners have to approve it? Or can Silver kind of work unilaterally? Because I felt like when he flattened the odds that it didn't need ownership approval, but maybe I'm just...
Well, everybody should want it. Everybody should want to flatten the odds. Everybody should want to de-incentivize tanking because it's made the NBA regular season frankly, this has been the least compelling NBA regular season I can remember. Well, now, the playoffs, I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic the playoffs will be awesome.
So I was thinking about this. NBA playoffs in general rock. Are we sure this one is?
Because maybe it's a personal thing because the Grizzlies have become so irrelevant. They're the team I fixate on the most. I would say because Oklahoma City hasn't been like historically elite, like they're just elite. They're not just like, but they're not 75 wins. They're not chasing history, right? Like that would be compelling if they were on the cusp of shattering an NBA record for most wins in a season. And we thought maybe they could be that. No, they're just like really, really, really good. You've got the emergence of San Antonio, I think, as a really interesting storyline. But is SportsCenter right now, or are national like talk shows, are they leaning in hard and really breaking down like the Eastern and Western Conference like playoff race? Like I don't feel like I feel like the play-in has also kind of taken some of the juice because it's like, whatever, everybody's getting in the playoffs. Like and if you're not, you really, really stink. So it's like it doesn't even feel like there's all that much at stake. That's the problem with the NBA regular season. It's why guys sit out. And so like the NBA keeps trying to fix problems that they create because they expand the playoffs and then they wonder why nobody wants to play in the regular season. It's because like you don't have to. It doesn't matter. Like you're gonna end up in the postseason anyway. Why am I gonna bust my tail, try to play 70 plus games, knowing full well not only might I have 20 plus playoff games, but now I mean if I'm a play-in team. Oh gosh, I mean that now you're adding another two or three on the front end. I mean, you're talking about a situation where, I mean, the NBA playoffs being what they are, four rounds of best of seven plus a play-in, like there's worlds in which, you know, you're gonna play what would essentially be two-thirds of a college basketball season just in the postseason, you know? So I don't know what the answer is, man, other than like dudes maybe aren't as competitive as they used to be. But I don't think there's really any reason to be when they structure it the way they do. And these regular season games, it's like there's just not a lot of juice to them.
Well, to your point, if you look over in the East, because the NBA put out, you know, the NBA comms team is doing the playoff scenarios every day. The teams, the Hawks, the Raptors. See, I think it's Hawks, Raptors, Hornets, Heat, Magic, Sixers. All of them could basically finish as high as fifth. And then I think it's the Sixers and the Heat could technically finish as low as 10th. And then everybody everyone else could be 5 through 9. Like that, but it doesn't even feel like it's a race, right? Now, I guess to your point of, is that because we are Grizzly specific? But like, I don't even feel like when you watch ESPN that like they're talking about this chase.
Yeah, like the like you look at Major League Baseball or the NFL, the race for those final playoff spots is a huge point of discussion, massive point of discussion. How do you get that final wild card spot in Major League Baseball? How do you get the final wild card spot in the NFL?
Well, or, like the last 2 years, we've had the 13-3 Minnesota Vikings playing the 14-2 Detroit Lions. Winner gets the one seed. Loser hops on a plane and goes and plays the Rams. This year we had Seattle, San Francisco. Last game of the year for winner take all. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
well, and also it's like there's incentive to winning your division in those other sports too. There's not in the NBA. They've made that decision, and this is the byproduct of it. Now, I do think on a certain level, like there's some validity to that. Like, if you have a significantly better record as a second place team in your division versus the team with a worse record that happened to win their division the next one over, it's like, I'm okay with the team with a better record being rewarded and having a better spot in the playoff seeding. But it does.
My question is like, I think I agree with you. I want the 82 games to matter. But why have divisions then? Like, what is the actual point?
Well, college football doesn't, you know, they did away with them. They've done away with divisions. So I don't really know. Like, there isn't really a point other than it just like it's a natural geographic grouping of teams who play each other more frequently than the others.
But there's like, my thing is, then we are at the point where the only reason it exists, right, is to fill out a schedule.
Kind of feels that way.
Because there is no incentive, like, and the Grizzlies, like, they won twice. And I'd rather have something like hanging than not, but like, what are we actually like, why do we actually have divisions?
It's a great question. The NBA's got a lot to work out. I feel like 5 years ago there was all this bluster about like, oh, the NBA, it's got momentum, it's thriving, it's becoming the most popular American sports league among the next generation of sports fans. And it's like, no, the NFL is still the most popular. Major League Baseball is like low-key making the changes they need to make to stay relevant. And basketball is over here just like, please, will our star players play more than 50 games? Like, I get it. Like, if you can protect the playoffs, and the NBA does a really good job of kind of monopolizing the sports calendar around playoff time, because you've got NFL offseason, you've got the kind of the early middle window of Major League Baseball. College sports are pretty much done unless you're like big into baseball or whatever. And so it's like they own the playoff portion of the sports calendar. So maybe in their minds, the strategy is, let's just make that as good as we can. And it generally is
realistically what the NBA only during their playoffs, the only thing they really have to fight is the NFL draft. And that's a weekend.
From an attention perspective, I mean, the playoffs and then free agency. I mean, I got to imagine like there is more eyeballs on NBA and free agency and more discussion, more airtime for First Take around free agency than there is around random regular season results. As so long as it's something other than like, you know, Bam going for 80 or, you know, a something, you know, LeBron trashing a random NBA city because the 4-star hotels aren't plush enough for him or whatever. Like outside of that stuff, I mean, the regular season, it lacks the juice to like drive the narrative around sports. Like you're seeing more discussion around the NFL draft on national shows right now than you are about one of the major American sports leagues that's coming down to the wire with playoff seeding, you know, on the line. I get, to me, that feels like a problem. Does the NBA view it as a problem? I don't know.
I'm going to guess no, because they can manipulate content. Like ESPN has been proven that they will at least listen to the NBA office of what they want them to talk about.
Right.
Or not talk about. And it does not even feel like the NBA is driving that conversation. And it's like, I can accept you're a postseason sport. It just feels like the NBA under Silver has had a degradation of their regular season that no other sport has had. And it's not even particularly close.
It's a problem. I think it is. Whether they do or not, I don't know. But when you're like, you can't have it both ways. Like you can't force your league into a situation where the playoffs are all that matter, and then be mad when guys don't want to suit up every night and play back to backs. And then you, we got to implement this threshold to where you got to play 65 plus to be eligible for awards. And then, to get a Supermax, you have to win those awards, right? And so it's like you're forcing guys to play in games that really don't matter. It just feels like an elongated preseason on a certain level. Now, I think there's value in it from this standpoint. Like, even if your team's not good, like, you can learn, like, you can, the reps that guys get, massive part of regular season. Like, that's a huge part
right,
of
but like,
it.
So, like, let's use our team here. Part of the reason why I have zero problem being so unabashedly tank, how many of these guys that are playing for the Grizzlies right now matter in terms
well,
of
that's,
like
Sed, that's where
Sed's been playing, okay? And because I do somewhat buy into the when you let losing into your building, that can be problematic. Like I do buy into that a little bit. But I'm okay with it in this specific set of circumstances that, for the most part, these are not the guys that you're building for.
Right. Like, when you got Adama off a ball playing 39 minutes, and you got Lucas Williamson playing 37 minutes, that's hard, man. Like, even as a pretty devout fan to, like, get into that. Like, we've seen Cedric Howard now enough. Like, we know who he is. And then it's like, okay, maybe Taylor Hendricks and Walter Clayton Jr. But like in baseball, you're not going to get like the double-A caliber guy with no future in the sport getting 30-plus games of significant playing time down the stretch, even if his team stinks. Like, and part of that, I get it. Like, there's not as much draft – like the draft status and draft positioning doesn't matter as much in Major League Baseball. But even on a certain level – I think NFL fans would revolt if their teams just altogether stop trying to win. Basketball fans are like,
we
hey.
we saw it a little. Like, the problem is you can sit there and take your team. So for instance, the Raiders and the Giants played week 17. The loser of the game was basically gonna get the number one pick. The Giants tried to win, and the Raiders told Max Crosby, your knee hurts. And they effectively tried to lose to get the number one pick. But it's a little bit different where the NFL likes to portray we don't have tanking. They have tanking. But it's a lot different when you have to sit there and at most take, what, three games? You're watching three games maybe where you're, like your team at a certain point has been horrific, and they've put themselves into – all right, are we going to tank this last couple of games? when you only have to sit there and take it for 3 hours, three times, so nine total hours, it's a lot different than basically where the Grizzlies announced on George, the Grizzlies traded Jaren on February 3rd, right? We basically had to endure, you know, over 2 months. 35 yeah. games of this?
Yeah.
All right, we'll get back into the conversation, but let's talk the other side of the Grizzlies. We'll talk with it. We'll talk about the Grizzlies next with Eric right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. That music means we welcome to the program the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. He is Eric Hasseltine. Eric, Cobb and I were talking about this. I know the NBA is famous for kind of overreacting and changing things, but we were talking about divisions.
Yeah.
If you offered a guaranteed spot to the top two teams in the division, do you think that would have any impact on tanking?
Wait, hold on now. So you're saying a guaranteed spot to what? To the playoffs?
I guess we'd have to say into the play-in, right? Because I don't think you want a situation where a second team is 40 wins and on the bracket. But if you offered them the spot in the play-in, do you think that would have any impact? Because we're kind of at the point where it's like, why do we still do divisions anymore?
Yeah, I think that's more what they're looking at. Probably moving forward is the division thing, because what's going to happen now is, and let me clarify, because it happened again last night. So we've obviously heard about expansion, right?
Yep.
So we know they're bringing in two teams, and they reportedly are Seattle and Las Vegas, correct?
Yep.
So everybody, including guys on like national radio, are going, well, then two teams got to go east. That's 100% incorrect.
We struggled on this math. I can't remember if Kevin pointed out, like, but Kevin, because I did the dumb thing of like
Kevin
I was the
was
idiot
fighting the fight of the two are going to go to the east, so it should be Minnesota and Memphis, and I'm like, no. Think about it this way, because it's the same way when you talk about records.
Yep.
And you think, oh man, if we just would have held on to that one game that we lost. You know, you think back come playoff time, and let's say you're 45 and 35, and you're like, man, we could be 40, you know, we could be 11 games over 500 if we just held on that game. It's like, no, it would be two, because you're taking away one
right
from a number and adding it to the other number. So it doesn't balance out. So if you have 15 teams in each, and I had explained this to my buddy in Denver last night, he goes, well, you and Minnesota would go. And I said, no, one's going. And I think it's probably going to be Minnesota because of that. He says, well, that doesn't make sense because you got to add two because you're adding two. I said, no, think about it. There's 15 and 15.
Right.
So if you add two, it's 17 and 15. If you take away two from the West now you have 17 and 15 in the East, and it's,
right,
again, unbalanced. So it's one and one. So there's talk about doing away with the divisions, but when you break it down, the divisions work, especially when you can't balance the exact same number of games in your own conference. Like if everybody played each other three times instead of where you need extra games in there, then that's different. So, you know, look, here's the thing. The Grizzlies fit perfectly in the Southeast Division, if you want to look at it. And maybe
you're trying to move us to the East?
Minneapolis. Yeah.
Okay, keep going.
I'm just saying, like, let's just say why you have divisions.
Yeah.
They fit perfectly in the Southwest, too, quite frankly. But they fit right there because you have an hour flight to Atlanta. You have an hour flight to Charlotte. You have an hour and 20-minute flight to Orlando. You have a two-hour flight to Miami. That's as ideal as it gets. It really is. It's a little more ideal than Minneapolis. Problem is, the Timberwolves have been pushing this button since they got into the NBA as an expansion team almost 40 years ago, and they wanted to be in the East, and it's never worked. They fit ideally into the, you know, to the Midwest, to the North, you know, where Chicago and Cleveland and Indiana and Detroit and Milwaukee are, and that would make sense. And the thing that I say about all of that is, yeah, that's right, and divisions work, and if you did move the Grizzlies to the east, you just simply move, you know, Seattle into the northwest, and you move Oklahoma City into the southeast, and then everybody's hunky-dory. But who knows what the NBA will do. But, you know, I think it creates natural rivalries when you see teams four times. You develop times where you don't like teams and groups, and certain teams develop rivalries, and it doesn't have to necessarily be in your division, but, you know, when you're talking about the Grizzly Spurs from those days where the Grizzlies knocked them off in that one playoff series, that sparked something in them. They took that personally. Those games became more important. As Hubie Brown used to say, they were double games because they did matter. I don't know that doing the top two thing would prevent this tanking thing. Here's the thing in terms of the what everybody's calling tanking. And I believe this wholeheartedly. I agree. I listen a lot in the mornings to the starting lineup on NBA radio with Frank Isola and Brian Scalabrine.
Yep.
And Brian Scalabrine, who played in the NBA and does a really good job now in his post-NBA career on the media, he says it best. We incentivize teams to not be good financially. And he's not wrong, because one of the worst years in terms of, you know, the Grizzlies' success was one of their most profitable.
Yeah.
It was the year where they traded everybody for salary cap flexibility and guys that were hurt and guys, because at the time, I'm pretty sure the NBA rule was you couldn't waive a player that was injured. So the Grizzlies make a trade with Los Angeles and the Lakers, and they take a center out of Texas named Chris Mim, who had injuries that sidelined his career, but was a lottery pick and had a salary, but the Lakers couldn't waive him. They needed cap space or roster spaces to be able to sign people. Grizzlies take him. Insurance covers most of the bill. The Lakers also give them cash incentives to cover the rest of the bill. That's not against the rules. So in a year where the Grizzlies had a team that was just not very good and not very competitive, and to be quite frank and honest, they struggled a little bit with the attendance, they made money. And they made money because not only were teams paying them to take their players and insurance was covering the guys that were listed as out for the year, they were under the salary cap. And when they're under the salary cap, you get a check from the NBA about like what is divided up from the luxury tax. I don't know what the math is. I'm not going to even pretend to know what the math is. I don't think it's just being under the tax. I think you have to be under the actual cap to get that check. Well, how do you get that check? How are you under the cap? You don't have a lot of high-priced players,
yeah,
which probably means you don't have a lot of star power on your team, which probably means you're going to take more butt kickings than you are get victories. It's just the way it is in this league. And that is incentive if you're like, hey, look, our star players are aging out. Let's break it down, build it back up. We're going to go young. We're going to trade them off. And that becomes the really kind of snafu for front offices. When do we get rid of our guys? When the run is over and we see it's over. It may not be totally over right now, but we see in a year or two this run's going to be over. Are we going to get the same value for these guys when it's clear that the run is over? Absolutely not. You're going to get the value for them when people are going, okay, they've made a commitment to break it down, but we want to be the team that jumps on this opportunity first. So we're going to throw that extra draft pick in. We're going to throw that young player that's not getting the reps in our system that he wants. See Shai Gilgeous-Alexander going from the Clippers, playing behind Chris Paul, to the Oklahoma City Thunder. You know, that's what happened. He didn't have a space in their rotation, and lo and behold, it worked out. There's been other guys it hasn't worked out. It's not always, fail-safe system. But you have to make that decision. And it's a hard sell to your fans because you're going, hey, look, we know you love these guys. We know we've had some fun times with them. But this is a business, and this is the business of pro sports, and you can't get too attached to things. So now you've created the situation where your team doesn't have a high payroll, doesn't have a lot of high-priced talent because you're young. You're trying to hit home runs in the lottery. And let's be real clear about something with Oklahoma City, because I hear everybody around the league, not just in Memphis, talking about the Grizzlies are trying to mimic the Thunder. Yeah, in a sense, sure. They're trying to mimic kind of what San Antonio did. They both got extremely lucky, not only in the lottery, because let's be honest about it, it's not just Shai. You got Chet Holmgren by having a year where you were bad enough to be in the top three. They also hit some of their draft picks you know, a mile long, like you talk about Jalen Williams. And a lot of teams could have had Jalen Williams. They didn't take him. He's now an all-star there, fits what they do. But they also had Paul George to trade and get young assets back in return. And so if you just are trading just for draft picks and not young talent that can develop, then that's it. The Grizzlies tried to acquire some young talent in the Jaren Jackson Jr. trade and did. They acquired a former lottery pick in Taylor Hendricks, who had a bad injury his rookie year and has gotten progressively better this year with the team. They acquired Walter Clayton Jr., a guy who everybody knew from the final 4 years. See what he's capable of. If it works, great. If it doesn't, you're not risking a lot. But your salary is going to be such that financially you are going to be in the upper echelon in terms of teams making money. Now, you're not going to get the same television rights deals as any of the major markets. If you're in a small market, you're not going to sell the same amount of tickets or nor have the same ticket revenue, because in New York, your tickets are going to be more expensive than any of the smaller markets. That's just a fact. I mean, think of Brooklyn. Brooklyn's got high ticket prices and just a team that's in total rebuild mode, but people are still going. That's the other factor. You're drawing on 10 times more of a population that can access your games. That's a big deal. So the reason I'm going all back to the tanking thing and you saying the division thing, you've got to find a way where you're not incentivized to be bad. We got to find a way that if you can, you're fully within your right as an organization to say it's time to hit the reset button. We got to rebuild this. But think of the way Major League Baseball does it. And I don't know that this is the right way. If you have a certain level of salary below, you know, because they don't have a cap.
Yep.
But if your salary is below a certain level, you cannot pick in the top six consecutive years. Take, for example, I think it was the White Sox and the A's in last year's draft.
That's why our boy Brent Rooker got paid.
Yeah, but they could not pick in the top six because they had picked there before the year before and their salary was not high enough for them to say, hey, Major League Baseball is saying, that's great. We understand that, you know, for the A's, it's a stadium issue. And, you know, Oakland is not a small market, so don't try to sell me that bunch of garbage. You got an owner that doesn't want to try to compete with the Yankees and Red Sox salary-wise, so they try to figure out a different way to do it. The problem is that different way to do it only lasts so long before everybody figures it out. But you talk about Chicago White Sox, stadium on the other side of town, really the second fiddle to the Chicago Cubs. You've got to put a product out there that gives your fans an incentive to go. If you're just continually just turning out young players and every time you get a star, you trade them off for prospects and you keep your salary low to make sure you're not losing money, you're not going to get rewarded in the draft every year. Maybe that's one way the NBA can do it. They would have to find their own version because, as you and I both know, the baseball draft has a lot more rounds. You need a lot more players. You're stocking an entire minor league system. And some guys aren't going to sign. They're going to go back, if they're high school kids or college kids, go back for another year, try to up their stock. But you could look at it that way. You could look at it, hey, you can't, if you get in the top five this year, you can't be there next year. Don't care how bad you are, you cannot pick in the top five in consecutive years. That's been thrown out there. There's been thrown out there, we expand the draft lottery to the teams outside the automatic plan. So seven and eight now, so you had four more teams in. So now you have 20 teams in the draft lottery and teams that are in the 7-8 positions. Because truthfully, and I understand people saying it, if you were the Grizzlies this year and the script gets written when the injuries are there, but you're still right there. Let's not forget, this team played Washington in December with a banged up roster with a chance to get to 500. Twice they faced the Wizards, chance to get to 500. That's 3.5 months ago. 3.5 months. You were at 500. I think it was going to be the 32nd game. I think they were 15-16. And then still almost got back to it. You almost went through half the season at 500. Your guy, this guy's out, that guy's out, this guy's out, that guy's out. Now you got to make a trade. Okay, because at the end of the day, you're looking up at the standings and you're going, if we really fight and we really lock in and we really go hard, we can certainly probably make that play-in tournament game if everybody gets back healthy. But we're probably going to be 7, 8, or 9. Or we're probably going to be 8, 9, or 10. Well, right there at 8, you're on the road for the first game. Tough situation. If you win that, you're getting the Spurs, you're getting whoever's 2, and now it's the Spurs. Basically, it looked more like you were 9 or 10. So what are you fighting for? You're fighting for a play-in spot where you just went through this script last year to try to win two games at 9 or 10, or one of two if you're 8, so you can go back to Oklahoma City, a team that's clearly ahead of you right now and where your roster is constructed? That doesn't make sense. That's why you hit the reset button. And that's where, again, you go, okay, if you're in the play-in tournament and you don't get in, you're obviously in the lottery. But if you do get in and you're the 7 or 8, maybe you get in anyway. I don't know that there's a perfect fix. All I do know is you can't have games as lopsided as they've been and the integrity of the game going the way it is. But I also understand why teams have to do it. But when you know, look, I don't care what Sacramento says, and I'm not trying to pick them out because everybody's done something where you go, okay, we get it. But when you foul a guy with 3 minutes to go,
God, that was so
bad. 1-point game, who's a lights out free throw shooter, and your excuse is we didn't know how many fouls we had. We were just trying to get to where we could take a foul. Come on, man. Like, I was born at night, not last night. And you know, you can't sell me that one. I'm not looking for any oceanfront property in the middle of Montana. Let's go. Come on now. I mean, it's just the fans are too smart. And to be honest with you, I hate saying this. Everybody's going to go, well, it's unfair to the fans. It's unfair to the fans. Well, what's more fair? To go out and fight, lose anyway, maybe win a couple of games and not try to be your best for next year. So, again, how do you do it? There's been suggestions of every year these 12 teams or these 10 teams are the only teams that have a shot at the number one. And you might be the number one team in the league in your year coming up. You're going to get some pushback on that, because if it came around this year in Oklahoma City is, you know, and you rank them by where they finished and it's a jumbled group, but let's say Oklahoma City gets lucky and says, all right, you know, we just got the number one pick and we're going to add whoever to this mix. People will lose their minds. Now, the way you could curtail that is, okay, these 10 teams are the only 10 teams that have a shot at it. You're picking in the second 20. We're going to do an entire lottery-based season. And then when you're in those 10 teams, you get an equal chance unless you make the playoffs. The teams that didn't make the playoffs have a two chances. The teams that made the playoffs have one. Maybe that's how you do it. I've heard that suggestion. I didn't think that was awful. But, man, I don't know. I know I'm giving this a really long answer. But, Jeffrey, and I'm not, you know, obviously I'm forbidden to wager on anything NBA related. That includes drafts, draft lotteries, WNBA, G League, NBA Europe, you know, the whatever games. I can't do it. Dunk contest, anything. Can't even play fantasy basketball. Have to turn it down every year.
Really?
I can't even play fantasy basketball unless it's just for, like, funsies.
Oh, okay. So if it has, like, a pool, if you have a prize, if there's a finance, okay,
like my
okay.
My friends were doing it, and they.
But you couldn't. Like, you could go play fantasy basketball for kicks and giggles.
Yeah, if it's just for fun, right? Like, just straight up for fun. Even then,
okay.
I get that.
Like,
because we all know that there are leagues that say, "Hey, we're just for fun," but on the back end, you're giving a guy money. So I'm just like, "Hey, you know what? I see enough of this. I follow it for my job. This isn't how I'm going to get my entertainment. Let's do baseball and do it for funsies. And then I don't have anything to answer for." But point of this being, I do look at the lines because I do want to see what these people who are incredibly good at judging what's going to happen in a game set the line at. I'd never seen a line like last night, and I didn't realize that there was a 24-point spread between the Thunder and the Jazz, who the Grizzlies play tomorrow night, and last night's was 23.5. Now, you can always tell what fans are in it for what. So we're at the Nuggets game last night. And look, by all accounts,